Alright, there's gotta be something on.
They say the word shit like 100 times.
You make the bully drink piss.
Whoa!
What is this exactly about?
Sean's parents are basically on the verge of a divorce.
We'll come back to bite them in the ass later.
I always wonder, like, why was it always that kid's problem?
Did you see that?
But I'm sure I'm quite drunk enough to see Meet the Beatles.
Of course, yeah. Nobody saw it. You know why? Because no one saw this movie.
It's like Avenue Q, only worse.
Yeah, it was definitely a rental for me.
On 3D, plus the IMAX 3D, plus the other theater had it.
Which was not really that hard.
Wait, where did he come from?
Get it up.
One of those covers of the Video Store, you remember?
Oh, this is that movie? Yep, of course. Yep, what in the hell is this and why is it on my TV? Yeah, I'm gonna have to catch this from the beginning.
What am I watching?
These days, it's like anybody can start their own stardom. Holonine.com, if you want to go check that out and check out our stardom that's beginning. I hope you've been enjoying what you've been hearing so far. I know it's been a lengthy, tangential conversation, and I think we're probably getting to the home stretch here, but unless there was anything else that anyone had percolating, I kind of had maybe what would be a good final question to start, like, taking it home.
Oh, Ian, it looked like you had something right on the tip of your tongue, though, too. So.
Well, I just love the fact with Parenthood, you know, for 1 second with Parenthood.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love the fact that the most philosophical, debated statement within that movie that really I think anybody can connect is when Keanu Reeves tells the mother, you know, Diana.
I love this.
You know. You have to have a driver's license, you know, you have to have a license.
Oh, yeah.
You have a license to catch a fish. You have to, but any asshole can be a parent. And, mm-hmm. you know, and as you get older, you go, damn, that's a really powerful statement.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm surprised it hasn't been memed yet. You know what I mean? Like, because you see memes that are close. You see memes, especially now with all the sort of like rape culture stuff that's going on. You go, you know, everybody seems to be focusing on the women involved in this. They can only have one baby in a 12-month period, okay? Or, well, you can get pregnant again, I guess. But men could go and impregnate hundreds of women in a 12-month period. And if we're looking at, like, overpopulation and the people who are going to be causing much more consequences as a result of these kinds of situations, why are we focusing on making it the women's responsibility? Is kind of, to
so
me,
you're
the
saying
modern...
you're in favor of forced sterilization?
Especially for rapists, sure. But it's, I think that's the modern equivalent of that point, though, is like, you know, let's start looking at where responsibilities lie. So, and again, though, heady stuff for kids to go see in the theater. Like, I would have never gotten that shit. Now, how much do you all hate the question? This is the best way to end this show. And I don't know if you even want to fill in the answer, but when someone comes, oh, you're into movies, what are your, like, top 5 favorite movies? You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
Can you narrow being a film aficionado down or someone who loves this type of stuff into 5 that would define you as, like, a fan? And I almost flat out say, I'll give you 5 cool movies, but I'm in no way copping to this is the definitive 5 movie collection of me. I like too much stuff. It's impossible. But I think as a question, it's so, derivative, not derivative. What am I thinking of? It's so finite in its thinking. It's sort of like trying to take this big thing, what we're talking about, loving movies, and making it into this quantifiable, oh, just list 5 things so I know who you are. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. do you guys find that that's sort of an impossibility, or do you have 5 that you think kind of pop to the surface all the time for you?
Do you want to take it? Yeah, there's 3 that I have a standard, but I'll give you 5. I'll give you 5. So my 3 that I always say are 3 that got me into filmmaking the most, or the ones that if I'm like, you know, when I'm making a film or I'm doing this, like these are the ones I'm going to watch before I go. So, hands down would be Ghostbusters.
Nice.
You know, Ghostbusters is what I, you know, as a kid, that's what got me into filmmaking. Romero's Creepshow.
Nice.
Whenever I'm grading, that's the movie where if I'm grading, I put that on in the background because it's just playing. I know it. If I want to look up, be like, oh, best part. Okay, great. Okay. All right, F minus. All right.
Start referring to that movie in your papers. All of Ian's students, start referring to Creepshow in your papers.
You're getting maybe B minus.
A little bit of an extra credit point.
But and then as a film, as the like, this is cinema. This is magic. Once Upon a Time in the West.
Ooh, nice. You know, Sergio Leone. Nice selection.
That's just one. That was the one where I watch it and I'm going, I'm watching a film. I'm not watching a story. I'm not watching entertainment. I'm watching a man make a movie and wants me to know he's making a movie. You know, that for me. If I had to add two more to it, though, one, I'm going to cheat on the answer, but the other one is a movie called Heaven Help Us.
Warren Beatty?
No, it's Heaven Can Wait. You're
You're right. Are you talking about the guys that were the parochial school boys?
Yes, the Catholic school boys.
Yes. Sorry.
That's one that I grew up watching. You know, that one I could pop on as well and just kind of play. The other thing I will say is any Roger Corman.
Oh, nice.
Just for the study. I mean, you know, Bucket of Blood is probably one that I'll go to all the time for, you know, but I'm watching the Corman movies not just for entertainment, but for, you know, this is how you can make movies cheap. This is how you can make them entertaining. There's a certain market these are for. You know, everything of the teacher in me is watching those going, you know, and I show my kids these movies, you know. I actually showed them Little Shop of Horrors last week. You know, Roger Corman. So, yeah, those would be the five.
So I will just interject one thing real quick, because you mentioned Roger Corman, who I love. I spent years trying to find this documentary, and I finally did. After 7 years, it blew my mind. It's about Roger Corman and stuff like that. It's a documentary that came out in 1998. It's called Some Nudity Required. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
I have not seen that.
Is amazing. It is made by a woman named Odette Springer, who was a music supervisor at Roger Corman's company. Okay. And she had her office right next to the casting director. And she noticed that, like, all these girls would come in with these giant boobs, and they would all do the same thing. They would hike up their skirts so that their butts are hanging out. They would pull down their dress so their boobs are hanging out. And they would, you know, wear tons of perfume. And she just kept seeing this over and over and over again. And she eventually made a documentary about the B-movie industry and how they kind of exploit women and, you know, the directors. It's not, like, made to bash. It's not made to, like, bash everything. It's made very open-minded. There's a lot of stuff of Julie Strain, and she's like, I'm not ashamed or embarrassed at all. I'm proud. I want everyone on the set when I'm, you know, naked and doing this. So it's a phenomenal, phenomenal film. If you guys haven't seen it yet, it's on Vimeo, even though it's kind of not supposed to be, but check it out. Some Nudity Required. It is an amazing look at Roger Corman's company and B-movies of the 90s. Fantastic.
Nice. Just up on IMDb. I'd never heard of that. I thought you were going to say, like, Corman's World.
I own Corman's World,
That's cool.
Man, he used to have a Showtime Roger Corman Presents back in the 90s. He used to have every week on Saturday. It'd be like short films and stuff that his company would produce. Yeah, cool stuff. Chris, you want to take any of the top five, or you want to decry the question?
I'm not going to decry it. I can't commit to these being the definitive top five. A couple of them will be for sure.
Sure.
And I've thought about this recently. It was like a meme or something. You know, what are the top five movies that would explain your taste in movies to other people? So I don't know if that's what it'll be, but. So for me, definitely Boogie Nights is unquestionably one of those films that, like you were saying, like, I'm watching a film when I saw this. Like, this isn't about, like, you know, I was 14, so I could have just been watching it for boobs and this and that. But, you know, I got very much that story right away. I was like, oh my, this isn't about pornography or the 70s or dancing or anything. This is about family. This is a fucked up family movie, but it is 100% a family movie. Yeah. It's all about family. So that's one. Donnie Brasco is probably another one.
Nice.
You know, they're both made around the mid-90s, which is ironic because I think of myself as such an 80s guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have a couple, like Copland would probably be another one.
Oh, wow.
Maybe,
ooh.
Maybe Last Boy Scout.
Oh, wow, dude. Yeah, we're going into the Shane Black world, man.
Oh, I love Shane Black. Oh, you know, so then it's hard to not say, like, oh, what do we pick, like, Lethal? You know, if I have one left, it's like, would I pick a Lethal Weapon or, like, a Back to the Future of the Karate Kid or something, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe Less Than Zero. That's
like
potential.
Dude.
Robert Downey Jr. Another Andrew McCarthy.
Andrew McCarthy.
Probably to me, for my money, you know, those are the best teen movies, right? The really dark, fucked up, twisted ones, you know?
Hell yeah.
But also, you know, I don't know what, you know, I'm going over five, but I also have to give, since we're talking to teen movies, a shout out to Days of Confused, because that's probably the most accurate teen movie I've seen in terms of putting my life on the screen.
I love that, dude. That's crazy.
I brought this up to my class. Do you think it's a great movie because it really is about nothing?
Days of Confused?
Yeah. Do you think it's a great teen movie because of it? Yeah.
That is definitely part of it.
Yeah.
Fully improv, too.
American Graffiti and Days of Confused are great examples that a movie really doesn't have to be about something. There's no MacGuffin. There's no plot structure. There's no.
Yeah.
It's just a day in the life.
Well, actually, the MacGuffin is the thing that everyone has to sign. They put that in.
The
he
pledge.
Didn't even really want to have
oh
that
gosh.
In.
Yeah,
I will not take drugs and do this, blah blah blah. Which actually, it ended up being beautiful, and I think it fits the movie very well. I think it's probably one of the situations where like some studio or some producer like interfered and said, you know, we should do a little bit of structure would be, and I think it helps the movie.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
The letter. Yeah, you're right.
Because for the most part, that movie is all improv, right? I mean, like that's one of the things that Linklater is amazing at, is he takes a bunch of really talented people and says, "All right, talk for like 2 hours, and we'll figure out how to make this into a movie." And it's between Dazed and Confused, I think, is like for me that would be a great example of like a genre of film that I like. You know, I could use that as like a staple of like. You can do this sort of free form, almost like a jazz style of filmmaking. He did the same thing with Before Sunrise and Before Sunset. The third one, Before Twilight,
Midnight.
I think, or Before Midnight, wasn't as strong as the first two. But it's this idea of like, let's just kind of be along with these two people for a day in their life. And in Dazed and Confused, it's like, let's be along with a bunch of kids who just graduated or are about to become seniors and see what the first day of summer is like. And how do you not feel like you're right there with them on the first day, the last day of school, first day of summer when that movie's playing?
So I love
that. Like, I always have to, I always say, like, I'm like you, Chris. I can't pick five that are going to define me, but I can give you five examples of, like, where my mind likes to hang out. You know what I mean? And for me, always the first one I mention is Michael Mann's Heat with Robert De Niro and Al Pacino.
Oh,
and the only thing I wish about that movie is that it was made before the 90s, because I feel like it's sort of like, I don't mean to make these selections to say that everything that came before didn't have the level of impact that these movies had on me, but they didn't have on me what this did. You know, Heat was like, so you can have all the action sort of relegated to two big scenes in the beginning and the middle, and all the rest of this is just dialogue. And if you miss part of a conversation, you're going to not get part of the movie. But then when you watch it multiple times, you go, oh my God, that's what they were talking about. Now this makes even more sense. I love Michael Mann's style of filmmaking, like Manhunter. I love Manhunter.
Oh, yeah.
I just introduced Carrie to Manhunter not too long ago.
Heat is the movie that I think, I will never be as cool as that movie is.
Oh, exactly. And you feel cool after you watch it, right? Like, you feel like, I just went through something. I graduated a class now that I've seen this, you know what I mean? Yeah. And now that I could talk about it with people. I remember showing it to an intern and a young guy on my team at my previous job. It was like over the summer when everybody else is on vacation. I'm like, I'm bringing in movies, guys. We're watching movies at lunch tomorrow. And after we finished watching, we watched Usual Suspects and Heat back to back. And that was what the intern just turned to me and goes, don't you just feel like cool now that you watched these? And I'm like, yeah, because those guys are all badasses. I want to be like that. I also have to throw some sort of direction at like David Lynch with like Lost Highway is the one I throw out there, because I'm like, you don't have to follow the whole Lynch universe to see what Lynch is about with this movie. But if you are a Lynch fan, you could see how it fits into the Lynch universe. You're like, this is just an extension of Twin Peaks. This is just Twin Peaks happening somewhere else. You know what I mean? It's like one long episode of Twin Peaks. But you know, you got Robert Blake in there and Bill Pullman, and they're doing stuff that is so far removed from the stuff. Well, maybe not Robert Blake, but Bill Pullman is on a different level in that movie. And so, and that's just what Lynch does. He brings people in, and it becomes like his stuff stands so starkly. And like Michael Mann, you could tell their stuff when you watch it. I have to throw some Tarantino in there. And since I feel like everybody's go-to at the time was Pulp Fiction, for me it was really Reservoir Dogs, to keep I guess in the same sort of like dialogue driven the whole story is told and not shown. And I mean, man, the tension that builds in that fishbowl when it's just like a couple people in one or two locations, and that's like a perfect example of how you can aim high and do something on like a very manageable budget, and it's all about picking the right talent and getting really good performances. I kind of like, I don't know, I feel like animation should be mentioned somewhere, but I kind of like stuff like Scanner Darkly, where they took like film and then animated over it, and it kind of showed we could bridge the two sort of approaches.
It's interesting you bring that up, Dave, because my class, I actually, for my digital media class, we focus on like Photoshop and Digital One, I've actually had them do a rotoscope project in the style of a Scanner Darkly
that nice.
The animators put it together. So the shine of the different paint levels and everything they do, that's a really interesting movie. And I showed the trailer for the kids, and they're going, this is a really interesting movie. And I had a couple come up to me saying, yeah, when we rented it, that's just a wild movie. I'm like,
yeah.
I mean, you know.
And the book is crazy, too. The book is awesome.
The New Jersey HorrorCon reputation is exploding. The atmosphere you guys had created. New Jersey HorrorCon was my entree into an actual horror convention.
Love it.
And you guys are doing a great job.
That is amazing. I'm super proud and super inspired to hear that. I mean, that's a testament to the community of cons and, you know, of horror and stuff in general.
My God.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's Carmen Electra.
Hey.
Wow, we are all giving high fives to an absolute icon.
This is incredible.
Trailblazer, amazing. You are amazing. Carmen Electra,
absolutely. Be well. Safe. Thank you so much.
Love.
Have a good one. Be well.
So
you can't see it on radio, but
oh,
she's
my
still
God.
Got it.
Yes,
that's
absolutely.
My wife
still
right
got
my
it.
My wife gets the picture of Carmen Electra.
The wife does. There you go, wife. Good job, wife. That's a keeper. That wife's a keeper.
Are you having a blast?
I am having a blast. Are you having a blast?
I am.
This place is awesome, right?
What's your most favorite part of the whole day so far?
When the guy dressed like Gene Simmons from Kiss stopped in front of our booth and we put Strutter on and he did a lip sync to the whole thing.
Guys, if you haven't subscribed yet, go ahead and do that.
Yesterday I bumped into Michael Winslow. I got to have this whole experience where Leslie Easterbrook was lost and looking for her autograph table, and I got to take her all around.
It's spooky, actually. I'm going to turn the chair around a little bit so I can see you.
Oh, well, all right.
Keep an eye on you. I saw you and I thought, this guy knows everything.
Oh.
Terrific.
Oh, really?
And sound in here with
cool.
you.
Thank
yeah.
you. Thank you. Yeah, it's
really
amazing
clear.
How it... Damon Della Greca of Slasher, this awesome app.
I wanted to do something that would really make it for these people who just love to create, who love horror.
Thank you for what you're doing, dude. It's
Thank
great
you.
That you put this together.
Absolutely, man. It's always good to see you.
We're trying to have as much fun, and we want people to have fun with us, and that's why we got guys like you stop by the table, hang out. We got to do the radio thing for a little bit.
He's from Jersey, you know. I'm from the South, so.
And I'm from the Bronx, so.
So we're all still friends. That's good.
So we're all good, yeah. Daniel Frankenstein. I'm representing psychothematicmedia.com. Call ourselves a creative collective.
My name is Gail Bykowitz.
Yeah, I'm Hector Della Rosa. We're partners in crime here. We're doing special effects makeup, and we're also independent filmmakers.
When I ran into them earlier, they were definitely vampire cowboys.
I love Better Off Dead. I love Dylan's Heads. And I'm just so glad that you guys remember
those
films.
Oh my God. Those movies, I would go to school and just try and talk like Bill and Ted all day.
Those
like,
triumphant
times. I want to go my $2, man.
Right?
I have walked around wanting those $2 for how many years now?
This is fantastic. But of course, I'm
we need some language lessons.
David Clone from the Hollow Knight Network, and by now you know what it's time for you to do. Let's go on over to NewJerseyHorrorCon.com, get yourself some tickets, and check out this awesome event where we are lifetime sponsors. We will be there from now until infinitum with all these incredible guests that are going to be at the next one, bringing you all the awesome from the show floor right to your digital door, right here at Hollow9.com at the New Jersey Horror Con and Film Festival.
Did you get it? I hope you got it.
I got it.
That's good. See you soon.
Yeah. You know, I think the book is amazing. When you talk about a movie that's a film, for me, it's The Godfather. I know I'm very masculine in my choices. I feel like I'm being very misogynistic a little bit, but because I've become very sensitive to that. Like when I was really into True Detective, I'm like, I can't imagine why chicks like this show, but damn, this show is really blowing me away.
And you kept trying to convince me to be offended, and I'm like, I'm just not. I just really like it.
How do you dig this? This guy's totally... whatever, it's all good. But The Godfather, I think, really kind of talking about taking a multi-generational family sort of story and putting it against the backdrop of what if your family was one of the most powerful organized crime families at like World War II era America. And then the series you could kind of follow and you see how they evolve. But that first one, and I'm talking about, there's this epic cut out there, the 5-hour kind of first two movies combined and put into chronological order.
The Godfather saga, it's called.
It's a TV cut.
Yeah, they did it for TV. Yeah.
It was that, if there was a period 2 years ago where HBO had that on during the holidays, and I think, I mean, it was like a 6-hour movie that I watched multiple times.
Don't they cut it to be in order? So it's like Godfather 2 and
chronological order.
So you see all the young Vito and then Michael and then Michael. Well, actually, it kind of disavows the third movie to a degree. Like it just stops. But man, Godfather 2, I had a new respect for after I saw that cut. So I kind of, I like to get away with, that's my cheat. I say the epic cut of Godfather, so I get two for the price of one.
Oh, that's a good movie. I like that.
And then, you know,
But damn it, acknowledge three. We're going to write this wrong in the universe.
I appreciate three is okay.
It's okay, but it's better than okay.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's okay, it's not going to compare.
It's hard to stand next to one and two, you know.
And it's not Sophia. I think, honestly, to me, it's how he goes out.
Yeah, yeah.
It's that where he's on the bench and he looks like a Benny Hill character, somebody once said, and he just falls
forward, drops the orange. But it's supposed to show you the throne is a lonely place, and when all is said and done, you lose everything to maintain it, and you're gonna die alone. Which is not the feeling you have at the end of the epic cut of 1 and 2. So, hey.
But I'll tell you what. You know what saves me? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say that, Dave. But to me, it's that when he cries, when his daughter cries, that is some of the best acting I have ever seen from an actor. And Al Pacino is just so crushed when his daughter is shot.
Yeah.
I don't know how, you know, to me that redeems everything that was bad about that movie is in that one shot.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Because I'm sorry, I cried.
I'll give it to you.
I'm bawling my eyes out at that.
Yeah, man.
And then the whole factor of him screaming and you don't hear it. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
That was such an amazing choice. And it's been ripped off.
Oh, my God.
By so many movies. I mean, every movie since then does that. You know, it just became one of those things.
That's where this series is like a genre defining, the same way that, you know, we were saying Linklater, genre defining as far as like improving a movie. You know, I mean, when you like the thing that did that first, it's kind of like, yeah, man, I feel like I'm in the club. I'm in the club of people that didn't have to be convinced this was good. We just knew it washed over us. And I don't want to not mention comedies because, like, I kind of feel like that's the other genre that, like, it rounds out the sort of collection. But it's, like, it's a range. You know, I love everything from National Lampoon's to, like, the, what's his name? Damn it. Why did I suddenly forget? Judd Apatow. Like, the whole Judd Apatow era of comedy. Like, the 40-year-old virgin. You know, and it's, but they're two different types of comedy. And it feels like one, National Lampoon was able to get away with raunchiness and everybody made it a household name. I had been at functions, like professional functions, and mentioned people that, you know, that I liked Superbad when it came out. And I started to notice, like, I was in a little bit too corporate of a crowd because people were starting to go, like, I just find those movies highly offensive and really, really, over the top. And I kind of just don't enjoy them at all. And I was like, so you like European Vacation, though. There's lots of boobs in that. There's lots and lots of boobs in that. You like Porky's, so that's okay because it was the 80s. But this one, for some reason, maybe because the 90s, we were the Xennials, right? We were the ones that were starting to go, why are we trying to be, you know, Why are we trying to be soft about this? If we're going to say things, let's just say like cock instead of dick. Let's go there.
Yeah.
And now we've not made it back. We're sort of still in the over, like, well, now not everything goes. So, hey, yeah. Welcome to that. Did you want to weigh in on the favorite films? So that's a no. Okay, we're getting a no from the rest of the show. Down. So
I will say though, since you mentioned European Vacation, there's an interesting story I've heard about that. So I don't know if you guys know, but that was directed by Amy Heckerling, who is one
no
of my
shit
directors.
Clueless.
Clueless. Look Who's Talking.
Nice.
You have, Johnny Dangerously.
Oh my God, Johnny Dangerously. Love it.
So she said at the time she took that movie because she goes, the script sucked. I knew it was going to be a piece of shit. I knew Chevy Chase and Beverly D'Angelo were going to be tough to work with, but I knew the movie was going to make money. And as a female director, you can't turn down opportunities to make movies that'll make money because you really need to do that stuff. And
oh, she goes, fascinating.
And she says it was 10 times worse than I thought it could have been. Beverly D'Angelo and Chevy Chase are the worst human beings I've ever worked with.
Oh, my God.
That and sucks to
it
learn.
It wasn't until later when I did Look Who's Talking that I got over it, because John Travolta and Kirstie Alley are the best people I've ever worked with.
Wow.
And that experience helped. And then she's like, and that's probably why we made the second one. And, you know, there wasn't really anything more to say or any more story to tell, but you know, no, I just had such a great time working with them that I was like, another one, sure, why not, like,
yeah,
let's do it.
And it just goes to show, like, if people are happy working on something, the audience will probably feel that, and it's why the second one was liked, you know what I mean? It was like the third one where people were like, all right, enough of this. Enough of the Look Who's Talking.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, the dogs are talking. Oh, get out of here.
Yeah, yeah. I think we've gone far enough. We've gone as far as we need to go with this.
But you gotta love the horror of that movie where it's Mel Brooks as the talking toilet.
Toilet.
Oh my God.
That was so the second good one, though. That was the second one.
If you don't give me the pee-pee, I'm gonna bite off your tushy.
Oh man, well guys, this has been a blast. We have covered so much ground in a little over an hour that I am like beyond blown away at the sort of capability our panel will have at tackling all kinds of movie topics and specific films. I can't imagine what it's gonna be like when we focus on just one movie to talk about for like a 40-minute session here. We're wrapping up, let's go around the table to our virtual guests. Do you guys have anything you want to plug or tell people about, or where they can find out more about what you might have going on the internet or project-wise? And it's okay if you have none. I just like to give this opportunity to everybody to plug their stuff. Pimp your shit, as we call it.
Yeah. Ian, you wanna... yeah, I don't have anything currently that's out there right now, but certainly if any of my students are listening, please take the film and video production class where you can talk about films as this nature. But nothing as of right now, but looking forward to a couple weeks being at the New Jersey Horror Con and getting to do this there. That's going to be amazing.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Chris, what's going on in your world, man?
Well, been a pretty busy 2020 for me so far. Working on some documentary stuff that is a little early for me to talk about specifics. But if you're movie fans, particularly 80s and 90s movie fans, I think some of these projects will get you excited when they are revealed. Other than that, you can, of course, check me out at Live Action Media. I have a show called Best Around, not too dissimilar to this, where we get around and talk about our movies. Best movies in particular categories. Every episode is a different category. So one week will be best Cusack movies. Next week it's best part threes. Next horror sequels, best, you know, Stallone, whatever.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that's very cool.
Cobra. That's it.
Cobra got a lot of love, man. Yeah. There's crime. There's the crime is a disease, and he's the cure. That's one I want the longer cut of, too. By the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, of course, New Jersey Horror Con. You can come meet me there. Check us out. There's a lot of Q&A panels, trivia, screenwriting contests, all kinds of fun to be had. And actually, a lot of those Q&A panels are now going up on a YouTube channel I've partnered with. Called Phantom Spotlight. So they have a much bigger audience than I do on YouTube. So it's good
nice.
For the con. It's good for, you know, me. It's good for their channel. So definitely check them out. There's a lot of great content that they have. And yeah, what? Oh, the only thing I was gonna say before is what we were talking about. What does it mean to be a movie lover? I think this entire conversation is a good case study in that, because we keep going on tangents. Oh, one more thing about Parenthood, or one more thing about Ghost. You know,
so yeah, yeah.
I think that's what it's about. When you love something so much, you can't help but not talk about it. And for me, it's regardless of whether or not anyone in the room wants to hear it. I just have to say it. Damn
right. Like, yeah. This is living in me, and I need to get it out. And just before we go on, you know, I realized, because you had brought up documentaries, I just want to mention them to cover my foray into the documentary world. Room 237 about The Shining, documentary made by filmmakers talking about all kinds of crazy theories about The Shining. And also Pretty as a Picture, the David Lynch, the making of Lost Highway. Very cool stuff to hear about people talking about the process. And, you know, Hollow Nine, we're redesigning our web experience as we record this. So be on the lookout for that in 2020. For now, you got us on Spotify, you got us on Podomatic, you got us on iTunes, you got us on Netflix. Not Netflix, I wish. You got us on YouTube, I mean. I see a Netflix and a YouTube folder tab right next to each other. And I was like, oh yeah, wishful thinking. You got us on Netflix. Maybe. You never know. Maybe. And we will be at New Jersey HorrorCon as well with our table set up. And hopefully Chris will stop by and do this live with us like we did last time. You can check out our promo video and see all kinds of fun stuff that Carrie and I did at the last one. And yeah, we're going to do that again, so we're gearing up for that, and we'll be doing more recordings like this, so keep an eye on the feed, keep an eye on wherever you get your podcast, because that's where the Hollow Nine is going to be. So guys, thank you for joining us again for our lunch debate.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Anything, anything else you wanted to say, Carrie?
Nope, just thanks for letting me crash your party, guys.
And we will be back. We will be back with more, so keep it locked in right here. And, yeah, man, keep loving those movies out there, guys. Talk to you soon.
Awesome. Later, guys.
You've been listening to the Hollow Nine Network, bringing you the very best in fan-made media. That's the word hollow, the number 9, I-N-E. Now broadcasting from our new home on the web, hollownine.com. Where you can find info on all of our awesome programming, as well as the team behind the shows. Leave us your feedback, join in the conversation, and be a part of the action. Find the Hollow Nine Network on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. Rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you find your podcasts. Email us at info@hollownine.com or at hollownine podcast@gmail.com. Join in the fun. Hollow Nine.
It's not easy butchering people. It's hard work. You know, there's a lot more like me.
We're talking to serial killers.
Serial killers!
New terminology.
Are criminals born, or are they formed?
How do we get ahead of crazy if we don't know how crazy thinks?
It's easier to ask for forgiveness than for permission.
Welcome to the Hollow Nine Mindhunter Podcast.
Hey, this is David Clone from the Hollow Nine Network, just checking in saying, hey, what's up to all our Radio Haver fans listening to us from all around the globe. We want to thank you for all of the live streams during our programming, and a big thanks to Drew Carson for giving us the slot. We've got some renovations going on at the home base at hollownine.com. Pretty soon, it's going to have a whole new look and feel, so just get ready. Until then, keep rocking over at Radio Haver.